I'd like to welcome everybody to another episode of Bulletproof. As always, we want everybody to stay bulletproof. And I want to thank all listeners out there for making us a top seven podcast right now on Apple and a top three on Spotify. And it's not because of my voice, it's because having amazing guests like my next guest today, who I'm excited to speak to. He's not only, check this out, not only a former police chief. I mean, that's big. We're not talking like, sergeant. We're talking a former police chief, and we're gonna get into that, as well as a cold case detective. And he now is also in his new post career, started The Curve, which is a nonprofit for law enforcement leaders who are looking to evolve into police culture. So, Chris, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Steve. It's a huge honor.
You are all over the map, my friend, and with some amazing things. And when they told me you were coming on as a guest, and I looked at your bio, to see that you were a former police chief was very impressive. But even prior to that, because there's a big difference for everybody who's not familiar with the ranks of the police department, there's a big difference between being a detective and a police chief, different responsibilities. So, when did you become a cop, Chris? What year was that?
1995. It's going way back.
1995. There you go. I got on a year before you. A year before
Okay.
you. I'm trying to date myself, but yes. So, is it something you always wanted to do, Chris, or is it something that you kind of fell into, or how'd that even come to pass?
I had that childhood dream as a little boy, and it never went away. And then in high school, I went on my first ride along with the city that I lived in, grew up in, and I was hooked. The first time I sat in that car and we went code three, I was like, this is it.
That's awesome. And it's funny because I came from a family. My father was a police officer, my brother, my uncles. So it's funny because I never really wanted to do it. I was just kind of preordained to be part of it. You know what I mean? So, but that's interesting. So, where did you start? Where were you a
So,
cop?
Mountain View. So, for your listeners, Mountain View is located in Silicon Valley in the San Francisco Bay Area. So, it's about 45 minutes south of San Francisco. And right now, if you were to drive there, you'd be surrounded by Google, LinkedIn, all sorts of high tech crime off. Sorry, not high tech crime, all sorts of high tech industry and stuff. So, it's a pretty cool place to become a cop.
Was it something that when you first got there, was it, would you say okay, in New York, because I can only compare it to New York, right? You had what you were called A houses, which were like the craziest, as far as Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, but Harlem, and then you had B houses, houses like in Queens and Staten Island, and then you had C houses that were not so busy at all. For those who are not familiar with that location, was that a busy location to be a cop in?
Yes and no. So the early part of my career, we were kind of the college town to the south of Stanford University. So basically a lot of apartments. It wasn't always a high tech neighborhood. It was actually a lot of rental units and stuff. So we actually had our fair share of gang activity when I first started. But when Google and the other high tech companies came in, it kind of priced everybody out, right? So you have the situation where over the course of a few years, we go from crazy busy to a change in the face of the city. And now, surrounded by high tech industry, a lot more affluent, priced all the cops out. It was really hard to, to live there. But no, it turned into quite, and it still is. It's an amazing place. I mean, when I left, I kid you not, from my office, I would generally see six to eight different brands of self-driving cars being tested, driving
Oh,
by,
wow.
autonomous robots delivering books and food and you name it. So it's a cool place.
Now, again, I'm sure that became a neighborhood that were, a little, well, again, an affluent neighborhood. I'm sure they weren't big cop supporters, so to speak. You probably had, not to get into, but you had more on the left than on the right, I would say, as far as where you were working. But that doesn't matter. So you're a police officer. How long before you kind of get upgraded or become a detective from the time you were a cop?
It's probably about I hit became a field training officer at about 2 years, and about 3.5, 4 years mark was when I became a detective, and I moved around like property crimes, person crimes, high tech crimes. And the other side of my kind of life is we had a collateral SWAT team, so I spent the next 13 years on SWAT. So I got to do my two favorite things, which was one investigations and the other one on the tactical side.
Now, was there a job as a police? Now, again, there's two ways you usually you make a certain grade of detective. Was there a certain job, or was there a certain criteria for you to get promoted to detective? Did something happen, or was it just your body of work?
I guess out in California, it's more, you test for the position. I didn't get it the first couple times, but they want to see that you're a field training officer. They want to see maturity. So they generally start you off in property crimes, which is burglary and stuff. And that's where I started. After that's when I got to move around, and I have a little bit of a tech side to me, so I went into high tech crimes right when the whole Silicon Valley boom took off. And then a rotation through person crimes, and then you know how it goes. You get promoted, you go back to the street, and then once you're onto the street for a few years, you get to go right back into those units as a supervisor, which I did, which was a lot of fun.
Right. And again, it's funny because you would mention and how you're always preordained to do it and you loved it. And again, that usually shows through. And when somebody tells me that, it usually tells me that they're aspiring to go up the ladder, right? So how did you go from a detective? Well, before we even go to detective to chief and all that stuff, what was your craziest story? If I and everybody I speak to that's a cop on any level from any location, I know I have one myself. If you say, hey, what was the craziest story you ever had? Whether it was on patrol as a member of this detective, what was your story that you go what that just right comes back to your mind?
There's one where we had a serial rapist running around town, and I had just got into the detective unit. And so I spent the next summer in the back of a minivan on surveillance. And I remember my detective sergeant handing me a pack of sunflower seeds. He goes, "Hey, the first one's free." He gives me seeds. And for the next 3 months and 25 pounds later, we sat on surveillance and finally found the guy. I mean, it's a sad story. He was attacking women brutally. When we actually, after we caught him, after 8 hours of interrogation, you find out this guy was a child soldier in El Salvador. I mean, not that I'm excusing anything, but it's just like that's when you realize the world's a really messed up place, right? And we kind of have a front row seat to a lot of that going on. But I mean, it was gratifying too to get a guy like that off the streets.
How did
And
you guys get him?
he had finally attacked somebody, and we had enough units in the area that we actually caught him leaving the perimeter. So he was pretty elusive before. We didn't know if he'd been made. I mean, all these things go through your head when you're like, when the weeks turn into months. But that was pretty much old fashioned gumshoe detective work.
Yeah, it was it something where he was just that good, and then he got a little overconfident, or just he just overate and it came to the point where at some point he was just going to get caught because he just,
His earlier he was sporadic early on, and then we even brought in like FBI profile units and a California State DOJ profiling unit just for some, and they were actually pretty accurate. I mean, they said, you're looking for a male and 20 to 25. I mean, it was right on, and we were able to narrow the time frame down to certain like times of the day, weekdays, and so I think we had about 10 detectives on this assignment for that 3 month span. In the end, the place where he attacked is just outside our perimeter, like where we were watching. So we think he might have been getting a little hanked up. Maybe he saw some extra patrol units, I don't know, but he did break from tradition a little bit. And then fortunately for us, we had a couple patrol officers who were just outside that perimeter, and then they saw him, taken off from the scene.
That's funny. Isn't it crazy though? The profiling. How I mean, people come in and they just say you between this age to that age, and they even go down to sometimes ethnicity. Well, it's usually the same ethnicity with serial anything. It's usually somebody like me, but maybe for a certain age group, and it's just it's crazy. But it's dead on. It's amazing how dead on it is. You know what I mean? So moving forward from there, how do you trans or tr you switch over and go from being a detective? Again, things work differently from the NYPD to, I always compare it to the NYPD, but it's a whole big world out there. So how does that transition happen from now being a detective for a while, to becoming eventually a police chief?
So I thought I was just going to be a sergeant for life because it was the best job in the whole agency. You hear a lot of cops say that, and I was having fun. And then I was complaining to a friend of mine, a mentor, about how, oh, look at so and so is trying to promote. And he's like, well, you want to work for him? I'm like, no, that'd be crazy. He's like, well, what are you going to do about it? Like, you're either going to work for him and shut up, or you need to put your name in the hat. Right. And so that was kind of a defining moment for me and my leadership journey, and just learning, okay, well, maybe. And I never saw myself as one of these guys that would ever be a chief. It just wasn't in the cards. But I care a lot about people, and I care a lot about making sure that, the guys and the gals go home safe, that they enjoy their time. Like when I ran a patrol team, it was all about being legal, professional, but having the greatest time of your life. Like I wanted people to look at back at this patrol team and go, everyone's going to remember this one time that we spent together because it was the greatest, right? Like that's my leadership approach. And fortunately for me, I had a couple mentors up the chain that just modeled what great leadership was like. So for me, it was a natural progression. Just think like them, behave like them, and lead like them. And that really kind of opened up a lot of doors.
What was the biggest moment where you realized how much responsibility now have? Because again, sorry to keep going back to our side. Somebody's a chief. I mean, when he comes in the room, everybody's gotta stand up and salute. You know what I mean? Everybody walks in. So one of my dear friends were a chief, right? And he, but he was And he had over 20 years on. He was still going to jobs. And I'm like, his name was Mike Marino, his name was, dear friend. And I'm like, Mike, and he could have got out with a three-quarter injury, right? So he would be making about 20,000 a month. But it's funny because a lot of these guys, everywhere they go in the department, everybody's standing up saluting, and then you go home, you're just Mike. You know what I mean? You're just dad. And dad, your wife's like, hey, Mike, take out the garbage. Now it's a weird transition, right? Because the whole day you're at work, everybody's like, it's chief, and now you go home and you're Chris. You know what I mean? How is that transition? I mean, certain guys just can't handle that transition. And when was that big moment for Chris? You're like, wow, this is, I got a lot of not only power, but a lot of responsibility.
Well, I was always one of those guys that didn't. I got some great advice early on, which was like, the job is what you do, it's not who you are, right? And I led like that too. And this actually dovetails a lot of into our work at The Curve, which is, with leadership, policing culture is such that the rank carries so much. Like suddenly, people treat people different because of rank. What The Curve would tell you is, the main responsibility of a leader is to take care of those in their charge. And that doesn't make you any better than anybody. It doesn't make you a better human. You just have a different set of responsibilities. And so I carried that into my leadership style as a chief, which was, it wasn't that I was informal, but I didn't wear my rank on my shoulders. I would oftentimes insist, and I, even when I would promote people, I would say, look, congratulations, here's your stripes. You can, if you have to get something done, you can order someone to do it and they'll do it. But if you always have to rely on your rank to get something done, you're going to lose the war. People should follow you because they're inspired by you, because they believe that you have their best interest and the department's best interest in mind, and they believe in who you are as a leader. So you should rarely have to say, I'm ordering you to do this, right? So, because people should know why they're doing it. They should know, maybe they're not going to do it the exact way you wanted it to, but you're going to give them the leeway to get it done, as long as it's legal, as long as it's ethical, right? And heck, it might even be done a lot better than you could have done it.
Right. Now, when you get promoted there, out there, or as you go up, do they transfer you to different commands?
You
Yeah. Okay.
automatically kind of always go back to the street, right? At every rank, no matter what, you go back to the street.
Right. Because you want, for people out there that are, they're not familiar, every time you get promoted, so if you're cops with everybody and then you become a sergeant, they can't leave you in the same precinct because now you were just cops with everybody. You would now to tell them, now you got to tell them what to do. They're going to look at you like, really? So they got a transfer usually where the guys only know you as a sergeant. And then when you go up to a lieutenant, same thing, because they don't want people to look at you, other than what you are. So
Although you might
that.
find this interesting, out here in California, the departments are smaller. So in the Bay Area, most departments, like ours, was about 96 officers sworn, right? And then most are kind of like that, give or take 100 or so here or there. And so it would happen that, one day you were on a patrol team and the next day you got your stripes. You wouldn't have the exact same set of people, but just by virtue of the math, you did
Oh,
have a
wow.
lot of people. And so, yeah, I mean, I remember my first night as a sergeant, someone I considered a friend was already testing the boundaries. Like he would
Oh,
send something
wow.
on the computer that was kind of like funny but very inappropriate.
Wow.
And I had to decide that first night, like, do I say something or do I not say something? I ended up saying, "Hey, man," I pulled him aside. I go, "What? Don't do that to me, right? Like, that's inappropriate. So don't take advantage of our friendship. It doesn't mean I'm just going to let everything slide."
Good. I mean, no, listen, you either take it and it gets progresses, right? Or you say, look, you do what you do. And, how does he, if he proceeds any further after that conversation, then excuse my language, is just being a jerk off. And then if you do decide to do something against him after that, after the warning and, then that's on him. You can't say, oh, Chris became too big for his britches because, that's the cop mentality. You know what I mean? But listen, you're straight up, and that was the right way to do it. So segueing into your next venture here, a lot of being the chief and doing this not only probably gave you a lot of contacts, right, as far as starting something like the Curve, but also gave you a lot of experience, right, and leadership experience. And if you don't mind, let's segue into what the Curve is, what your mission is, and why you think it's important for our listeners to hear.
Sure. So it's the summer of 2020. The world's kind of on fire. We have COVID come through. We have a lot of the civil unrest going on around the country. And I'm part of this group called the International Association of Chiefs of Police, or IACP, right? So I get to know a network of leaders, police leaders out in the world. And the Curve started when, I don't know how if you're familiar with Simon Sinek, and your listeners probably are. Great leadership expert, written a few books, starts with Why Leaders Eat Last and Infinite Game. And Simon basically has had a few contacts within the IACP. In fact, on his third book, he wrote about Chief Jack Cawley in the Castle Rock Police Department. So that was one of the chapters, right? So he actually asks Jack, "Hey, Jack, can you go out and find the more modern, forward-thinking police chiefs that in IACP, and let's get on a Zoom call?" And it's the beginning of that Zoom call where we start to realize that even though we're spread apart all over the country, the leadership dynamics, the issues with the policing culture, are very similar. That there's a need to modernize it, to always think, how do we push the profession forward? So basically, myself and about four other chiefs and sheriffs from across the country, along with Simon, founded the Curve about 5 years ago.
And for somebody like myself, I'm listening right now to you, listening to this podcast. What would somebody who is either a former police officer or somebody has some sort of a background in law enforcement, military, would there be, well, what is the benefit to potentially being part of the Curve?
So we don't actually see ourselves as like a training outfit. We actually see ourselves as a social movement to inspire policing leaders. So think of it this way. Typically across the country, when you get promoted, you get sent to leadership schools that basically check the box. They tell you how not to get sued. It's all
Right.
minimum standard stuff, right? So the curve provides leadership insight and resources, and it's just a different way of thinking about, what's our purpose as leaders? Well, our purpose is to, inspire those. And I'll give you an example. One of the things we believe is, everyone working in police and sheriff's offices should be inspired by the work they do. They should be excited to come to work the next day. And if they're not, what are the leadership team doing about that? Right? That leaders set the culture. And if the culture is toxic, then you're going to get bad teams, you're going to get bad cultures, you're going to get a lot of the bad use of forces we see across the country. I guarantee you it's a bad toxic culture in there, right? Where there's no trust in the ranks, that maybe there's a sergeant or a lieutenant or a captain who allows different rogue units to kind of go rogue and go do really stupid, crazy things, right? But to contrast that, you have an agency where the leaders actively define their culture. They serve the officers that they're in charge of. You'll find a very different dynamic, and that's what we're trying to spread across the country. It's like, look, there's no one size fits all, but leaders got to take a different look at the way they lead as opposed to just letting things happen. And here's something for you. I mean, you overlap with Hollywood a lot, so I throw this theory out for you. We think, if you think who has more influence on policing culture, is it the leaders at the top or is it all the different cop shows that you see? Right? Like, I pretty much, most of us go, we behave the way we do it because we've seen it on TV and a movie and a show. And it's like the tail wagging the dog at that point. So our assertion is, no, man, it's up to the leaders to set that tone and, really plant the flag and say, this is how cops and deputies should behave.
But is this something that only law enforcement can be a part of, or do you, is it a structure where, it's a leadership mentor type of thing where if I'm a CEO of a company, I would benefit from this, or is it more just for law enforcement particularly?
Right. The beauty of it is a lot of our stuff is drawn from Simon's work, and Simon primarily works in the private sector, right? So, like, my job is to actually take all that le the leadership concept and just explain it in a way that cops can understand. So it works for both. At the end of the day, I think most leaders understand that no matter what industry you're in, it's all about human dynamics, right? When humans lead humans, there's issues, there's personnel issues, there's challenges, there's communication breakdowns. So it really does apply. I mean, for your listeners, thecurve.org, free resources. We put out blogs and videos on there. There's really no pay structure for anything. Everything is completely free for everybody to use and share.
And what is your so like we discussed before, we touched on it real quickly. Believe it or not, we're almost through a half hour already, which is bananas. But if I said, Chris, what is your Yahtzee? If you somebody became part of the curve, what would be the pinnacle of somebody getting it out? Somebody like let's take it back even further. I just became a sergeant. I joined. I want to be part of the curve. What are you hoping, or what am I hoping to get out of the curve? What makes
That
sense?
we, yep, totally. That we will inspire you to look at leadership differently, to look at your team differently. It's not going to erase everything that you've learned within the industry, but it's just going to give you that extra little bump where you're like, okay, it's a calling. This is what I need to do. This is how I need to speak. This is how I need to communicate with the folks that I lead. And so that's, what drives us. And it's great because we talk to people all over the country. It doesn't matter what part of the country you're in, these dynamics are very similar. Because
Absolutely.
it's not easy to be a leader. It's not easy to be on a team. No one likes being on a bad team. So it benefits everybody.
And trust me, being a New York Jets fan, I know about being on bad teams. So, in closing, Chris, well, they did win yesterday, believe it or not. But before we let you go today, so you had mentioned just real quickly, how does everybody find you? I know you mentioned the website, but you said it real quickly. If you could just say it again and how people could find you. That would be great.
Absolutely. So our website is thecurve.org. We're also on LinkedIn and also have Instagram at thecurve.org. If you want to get in touch with me, I'm on LinkedIn as well. Very responsive, always passionate to help people out. So just look me up by my name and I'd be happy to connect.
And anybody that's listening out there as well to follow the page, either myself personally or on the Bulletproof podcast, Chris and I are connected too. So if for some reason you don't get this down in time, you could always come and find Chris through myself as well. Chris, thank you so much today. It was awesome. I wish I had an hour with you or more, because I would have really dug into some of the detective work and so and a little more of the grime, which I like to get into. But your story is so old, which is awesome, that I just wanted to make sure we got everything and we touched on everything today. So Chris Shank, thank you so much. We wish nothing but luck on the curve, and the growth of it. And like I said, anything that happens in the future that you need me to push, I'd be more than happy to. I'd like to thank you. I'd like to thank our producers at Believe and our sponsors. I'd like to thank everybody listening. And again, remember, stay bulletproof. And we have three more spots where you go up on Spotify. So keep that going. We'll talk to you real soon. And stay bulletproof. Thanks so much for listening.